Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Job chapter 37, verses 1 through 24. We will call this chapter Elihu Proclaims God's Majesty. Now, what Elihu is doing, he's the fourth false friend. He's trying to show how God is great and Job is not so great. Job is a sinner. He ought not to talk to God. He ought not to ask God to listen to him. He ought to confess some kind of sin. Now, what that sin was is debated. It could have been a pre-calamity sin that caused the calamity, in which case Elihu would be agreeing with the three false friends, or it could be a post-calamity sin like demanding that God answer Job, or talking to God with an improper tone of voice, being presumptuous or whatever. It's not clear, but it is clear that Elihu thinks that Job is a sinner and God is great, and Job, you need to bow down. Of course, there's no comfort given to Job. There's no explanation given to Job of why he's suffering when Job didn't sin. And so now we end 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 chapters of Elihu bloviating about what a sinner Job is. So we start now with Job 37, verses 1 through 5. Elihu says to Job, "At this also my heart trembles and leaps from its place. Listen closely to the thunder of his voice," God's voice, "and the rumbling that goes out from God's mouth. Under the whole heaven he lets it loose, and his lightning to the ends of the earth. After it, a voice roars. God thunders with his majestic voice, and God does not restrain the lightnings when his voice is heard. God thunders with his voice wondrously, doing great things which we cannot comprehend." Now, verse 1 says this, "At this also my heart trembles," Elihu says. At what? Well, let me read the last several verses of chapter 36. And by the way, this chapter, it really belongs with chapter 36. It should not have been divided. Let me read what Adam Clark says about that. "This, to the middle of Job 37:5, should be added to the preceding chapter, as it is a continuation of the account of the thunder and lightning given at the conclusion of that chapter. Our present division is as absurd as it is unfortunate." Okay, so let's just say that these first five verses that I just read to you go with the last several verses of Job 36. Now let me read those last several verses, Job 36:29 through 33. "Can anyone understand how the clouds spread out, or how the thunder roars from God's pavilion? See how God spreads his lightning around him and covers the depths of the sea. For God judges the nations with ease. He gives food in abundance. He covers his hands with lightning and commands it to hit its mark," or he fills his hands with lightning. "The thunder declares his presence, the cattle also, the approaching storm." So the previous verses in chapter 36 are designed to show how great God is, and of course by implication how pitiful Job is. And in describing God as great, Elihu talks about how God controls the weather, the clouds under God's upper chambers, God's pavilion, the lightning that God has in his hands, and he whacks it down at people, throws it at people to hit its mark, judging the nations like thunder, giving food by putting the rain on the crop so the food will grow. The cattle even announce his presence when they start lowing and acting funny when thunder approaches. So that's what the context is. And so in verse 1, Elihu says, "At this my heart trembles." In other words, thinking about God's thunder and lightning. "My heart trembles and leaps from its place." Verse 2, "Listen closely to the thunder of his voice." What thunder is that? I just think it's thunder. Speaking poetically, God speaking with thunder. If you've ever been in the middle of a thunderstorm, it feels like God is speaking, I'll tell you. John Gill points out that at the giving of the law, so much thunder and lightning was there that Moses himself was scared to death. Now, some people speculate, Gill, Clark, and Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown mention this, that there could have been an actual thunderstorm going on as Elihu spoke. In other words, in verse 2, Elihu's saying, "Listen, Job, listen closely to the thunder of his voice. You hear it?" I don't think so, but it's a nice thought. This idea of God being connected with thunder and lightning and clouds, you see all the way through the scriptures, the Old Testament's everywhere. For example, in Psalm 76, 16 through 19, "The waters saw you, O God, the waters saw you. They were in anguish. The deeps also trembled." Well, the waters would include waters in the sky and waters in the deeps. That's water in the oceans. Verse 17, "The clouds poured out water. The skies gave forth a sound. Your arrows flashed here and there." That's the lightning. "The sound of your thunder was in the whirlwind. The lightnings lit up the world. The earth trembled and shook. Your way was in the sea, and your paths in the mighty waters, and your footprints may not be known." So God, you're cruising through all these clouds and all these waters, both in the sky and in the seas, and you're throwing lightning everywhere. You're a great big God. Job, you're a nothing burger. Verse 3, under the whole heaven, God lets it loose and his lightning to the ends of the earth. Verse 4, after it, after what? After the lightning, a voice roars. Of course, as you know, when lightning hits the ground or flashes in the sky, you wait a little bit, and there's the sound of the thunder right behind it. The light of lightning is the speed of light. The thunder comes with the speed of sound. The speed of sound is much, much, much slower than the speed of light. So after the lightning, the voice of thunder roars. He thunders with his majestic voice. He does not restrain the lightnings when his voice is heard. In other words, after the thunder, there's more lightning. So you got lightning, thunders, lightning. Verse 5, God thunders with his voice wondrously, doing great things which we cannot comprehend. Great things like splitting rocks, splitting mountains. You ever seen lightning hit a tree? I saw that one time. Bang! Fireballs going everywhere. Lightning shattering mighty oaks and cedars, as John Gill suggests. Lightning does great things. So this is a good description of God. Elihu might have been a terrible comforter, but he was a great orator, or a great poet, if you will. Job 37, 6 through 10, we continue. Elihu continues, "For to the snow, God says, fall on the earth, and to the downpour and the rain, be strong. God seals the hand of every man, that all men may know his work. Then the beast goes into its lair and remains in its den. Out of the south comes the storm, and out of the north the cold. From the breath of God ice is made, and the expanse of the waters is frozen." Now verse 6 is obvious. God tells the snow, fall. He tells the rain, be strong, strong. Fall on the ground in a strong way. In other words, let it be a downpour. But verse 7 is not so easy. God seals the hand of every man. What does that mean? Well, let's look at other translations. The NIV has it. So that all men he has made may know his work, he stops every man from his labor. So in other words, the NASB says God seals the hand of every man. The NIV says God stops every man from his labor. The idea is, when the weather gets bad, you have to quit working. NIV Study Bible says this, quote, "It seems that in every age, people become so focused on their own plans that they lose sight of God. Elihu knew that God's storms can easily halt men's plans, forcing them to remain inside for shelter. Busy schedules and hectic activities allow people little time to give to God or to see what he is doing. When bad weather forces the cancellation of our plans, perhaps God wants to slow us down a bit so we will notice him." Well, I think that's a good translation. There's other possible translations, "For he seals the hand of every man." The NIV margin says, "He fills all men with fear by his power." Okay, that makes sense, but that's the marginal translation. So let's look at some other translations. Holman Christian Study Bible, "The thunder and lightning service is signed to all mankind so that all men may know his work." Okay, that makes sense. It's different than the NIV, but it makes sense. Now here are three translations that agree with the NIV. "God puts an end to the work of every man, so that all may see his work." In other words, you got to go indoors when it starts raining, and that puts an end to your work. God's Word translation has this, "God makes it impossible to do anything so that people will recognize his work." Impossible to do anything because you can't go outside and work with all the thunder and lightning. Job 37:7 in the New American Bible. This is my favorite. "God shuts up all mankind indoors." You have to go indoors when the rain and the lightning comes. So I think that's the best way to translate it here. Verse 8, "The beast goes into its lair." That's because it's thundering and lightning, so he's got to go find shelter. Animals do. Got to remain in his den. Verse 9, "Out of the south comes a storm, and out of the north the cold." The storm could be the KJV, the whirlwind. That would fit with verse 10, which says, "From the breath of God ice is made." Whirlwind, breath, wind and breath. The NIV has tempest. Somebody says it could be a hot, scorching wind, but I don't think so because it's talking about cold coming from the north and the water. Waters are frozen on the lakes or the expanse of the waters. So storms from the south, frigid, cold, arctic winds from the north. God is responsible for all that. We go now to 37, Job chapter 37, verses 11 through 13. "God saturates clouds with moisture. He scatters his lightning through them. They swirl about, turning round and round at his direction, accomplishing everything he commands them over the surface of the inhabited world. He causes this to happen for punishment for his land or for his faithful love." Elihu continues to talk about natural phenomena controlled by God to show God's greatness. God saturates clouds with moisture. He scatters his lightning through them, through the clouds. If you look at the clouds, you see lightning appearing from the left to the right. Verse 12, the clouds swirl about, turning round and round in his direction, accomplishing everything he commands. Now, what he commands is lightning strikes to destroy and rain falls to nourish, to water. Verse 13, he causes this to happen for punishment. That's when something bad happens from lightning and or for his faithful love, his mercy. In other words, that's when the rain falls to water the croplands, as the pulpit commentary says. The punishment not only could be from lightning, but from clouds pouring out rain in too copious a manner, such that crops are washed away in floods and so forth. Now, let's look at verse 13. God causes this to happen for punishment, this falling of the heavy rains and the lightning for punishment. Now, the implication of this is Elihu is saying, Job, you're a sinner. The reason that you've had lightning fall in your life is because you're being punished. Well, Elihu does not allow that God might be testing Job, not punishing him. Now, that word punishment is a little bit ambiguous. God's Word translation translates verse 13 this way, whether for discipline or for the good of his earth or out of mercy, he makes the storm appear. For discipline, which is not the same thing as punishment. You can discipline your basketball team by making them run laps around the gym. You're not punishing them. You're just trying to train them. So there's a difference between discipline and punishment, but the concepts are sort of close. They're both a little bit unpleasant, and the Holman Christian Study Bible here puts punishment, God's Word has discipline, so it's a little ambiguous. But if Elihu is trying to say that God punishes the land with floods and with lightning, he's implying that Job, he's also punishing you. And if that's what he's saying, and I suspect that it is, he's not being fair to Job. As the NIV Study Bible puts it, God can use his creation for any purpose. At times, God is neutral in his treatment of humans. Jesus said that God sends his rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. At other times, God uses nature to discipline. The same rain that waters the crops can also flood them. However, it is unwise to assume that all natural disasters are God's judgment. God may be testing a person's faith as he did with Job. Well, the NIV Study Bible is very gentle about it. Oh, maybe. No, I don't think it's any maybe about it. Elihu was trying to blast Job and not allowing for the fact that Job might be being disciplined by God as opposed to being punished by God for some unproven sin that the four false friends can't prove. We go down to Job 37, verses 14 through 18. Listen to this, Job, Elihu continues. Stop and consider God's wonders. Do you know how God directs his clouds or makes their lightning flash? Do you understand how the clouds float, those wonderful works of him who has perfect knowledge? You whose clothes get hot when the south wind brings calm to the land, can you help God spread out the skies as hard as a cast metal mirror? Now remember, this was written probably in the second millennium BC when there was not scientific knowledge about what makes lightning flash or what makes clouds float. We know that now. You take high school physics, you know it. But not back then, they didn't. And so Elihu's point is, you don't understand these wonderful acts of nature that God is behind, Job. So why do you think that you can get God to explain to you why you're suffering? You don't know why you're suffering. And it's foolish of you to think that you're going to get God to tell you. All right, a few little details here. Verse 15, do you know how God directs his cloud or makes their lightning flash? That word lightning in the KJV is light, makes their light flash. And Clark says of that, almost every critic of note understands this of the rainbow. Do you know how God directs his clouds or makes the rainbow flash? I don't think so. I think the modern translations of lightning make a lot more sense. I think of lightning flashing more than I think of a rainbow flashing. Verse 17, you whose clothes get hot when the south wind brings calm to the land. As the pulpit commentary puts it, Job can't explain this any more than he can explain all the other meteorological phenomena. He can't explain why the thunder roars and why the lightning flashes and why the south wind comes up, apparently, after a storm to calm the land after a storm's over. And Job, you can't help God spread out the skies as hard as a cast metal mirror. They didn't have glass for mirrors back then. They had cast metal, say like bronze. It would shine and you could look in the mirror and see your image. And the image here, the metaphor, the cast metal is very hard. It's very clear too. It's very hard And as Adam Clark puts it, the whole concave of heaven in a clear day or brilliant night is like a mass of polished metal reflecting or transmitting innumerable images. Well, if you look at a bright blue sky, it does look hard, like metal. Job, you can't explain that. Elihu says, we go now to Job 37, verses 19 through 20. Elihu continues, speaking to Job, teach us what we should say to him, to God. We cannot prepare our case because of our darkness. Should he be told that I want to speak? Can a man speak when he is confused? So, Elihu's being pretty sarcastic here. Tell me, Job, what we ought to say to him about how God has laid out his nature. How should we reason with him about God's works of providence? You don't know anything, as John Gill says. You know so little of how nature works. Why do you think that you know enough to argue with God? In verse 19, Elihu says we cannot prepare our case because of our darkness. That means our lack of understanding. We don't understand God. So, Job, how do you presume to understand God? God's ways are unsearchable and past finding out. We live in darkness down here. And then in verse 20, Elihu tells Job, should God be told that I want to speak? He's referring to what Job said in Job 31:35, when Job said, if only I had someone to hear my case. Here is my signature, i.e. my signature on my legal document, my petition, if you will. Let the Almighty answer me. Let my opponent compose his indictment. In other words, I want some answers, God. And so Elihu is saying, should you tell God that you want to speak to him, Job? Can a man speak when he's confused? How can some confused son of a gun like you are, Job, how can you dare to presume to talk to God? Because you're confused. Can a man speak when he is confused? Here's what John Gill says about this confusion. Quote, if a man speaks of the being and perfections of God, he is soon lost. His essence and many of his attributes are beyond his comprehension. If he speaks of his works of nature and providence, he is presently out of his depth. There is a bathos, a depth in them he cannot fathom. If he speaks of his love and grace and mercy in the salvation of man, he is swallowed up with admiration. He is obliged to say, what manner of love is this? It has heights he cannot reach, depths he cannot get to the bottom of, lengths and breadths immeasurable. John Gill speaks in his fancy 18th century English. So, Elihu is sarcastically saying, Job, what's the point of presenting your case before God? You're confused. You don't know anything about God, so just forget it. We go now to Job 37, verses 21 through 22. Elihu continues speaking to Job. Now, men cannot even look at the sun when it is in the skies after a wind has swept through and cleared them away. Yet out of the north God comes, shrouded in a golden glow. Awesome majesty surrounds him. No one can even look at the sun when it is in the skies, the NIV has. No one can look at the sun bright as it is in the skies after the wind has swept them clean. In other words, the wind comes, blows the clouds away, and you got a straight shot at the sun. You can't look at it anymore. It's too bright. That's what God is, bright. What's the point of comparison between God and the sun? Brilliant and unapproachable, as the NIV Study Bible puts it. Adam Clark says, the sun presents insufferable brightness. The NIV Study Bible suggests that maybe it could refer to the fact that God is a consuming fire. Deuteronomy 4:24, for the Lord your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God. Hebrews 12:29, for our God is a consuming fire. Or it could just merely refer to the glory of God and the power of God. So Job, you can't even look at the sun. You think you're going to look at God? Verse 22, yet out of the north God comes, shrouded in a golden glow. Now, what does it mean when God is said to come out of the north? John Gill suggests it means that the air is bright and pure and as gold when it comes from the north. It's serene, it's peaceful. God comes shrouded in a golden glow because he's like the sun coming out of the north. The north wind, perhaps this means, as Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say, the north wind has cleared the air. So the north wind clears the air, and then the sun comes shrouded in a golden glow. God comes after the wind. This is like Proverbs 25:23, KJV translation, the north wind driveth away rain. Awesome majesty surrounds God. Well, whatever it means, I'm not exactly sure. But the point is that God comes, he's shrouded in glory, in a golden glow. Awesome majesty surrounds him. So Job, who are you to be talking to God? We go now to Job 37, verses 23 through 24, and we will finish this chapter. Elihu continues speaking to Job. The Almighty, we cannot find him. He is exalted in power, and he will not do violence to justice and abundant righteousness. Therefore, men fear him. He does not regard any who are wise of heart. So basically, Elihu continues, Job, quit trying to talk to God. Quit trying to reason with God. Quit trying to ask God why you're suffering. He's too big for you. He will not do violence to justice. And Job, you're not just. He will not do violence to abundant righteousness. That's true. But you're not abundantly righteous. You're sinning. Verse 24, men fear God. And what Elihu means is men should fear God because he's so powerful. God does not regard any men who are wise of heart. The NIV margin says, for God does not have regard for any who think they are wise. John Gill suggests that's what it really means. God does not regard any men who think they're wise. And I think that makes sense. He's speaking a little sarcastically here. Job, you think you're wise. He's not going to regard you. Or it could be translated as the NIV. Does God not have regard for all the wise in heart? Question mark. And of course, it's a rhetorical question that means, yes, he regards people who are wise in heart, but Job, you're not wise. That's why God's not regarding you. Now, let me finish up Elihu's speech with a great quote from Adam Clark, which will present us with a great segue into the next chapter, chapter 38, where we see the Lord beginning to answer Job, give him some answers of sorts. So let's read what Clark says, quote, thus ends the speech of Elihu, a speech of a widely different description on the whole from that of the three friends of Job who had spoken so largely before him. In the speeches of Eliphaz, Zophar, and Bildad, there is little besides a tissue of borrowed wise sayings and ancient proverbs and maxims relative to the nature of God and his moral government of the world. In the speech of Elihu, everything appears to be original. He speaks from a deep and comprehensive mind that had profoundly studied the subjects on which he discoursed. His descriptions of the divine attributes and of the wonderful works of God are correct, splendid, impressive, and inimitable. Elihu, having now come nearly to a close, and knowing that the Almighty would appear and speak for himself, judiciously prepares for and announces God's coming by the thunder and lightning of which he has given so terrific and majestic a description in this and the preceding chapter. The evidences of the divine presence throng on his eyes and mind. The incomprehensible glory and excellency of God confound all his powers of reasoning and description. He cannot arrange his words by reason of darkness, and he concludes with stating that to poor, weak man, God must forever be incomprehensible, and to him a subject of deep religious fear and reverence. Just then the terrible majesty of the Lord appears. Elihu is silent. The rushing, mighty wind for which the description of the thunder and lightning had prepared poor, confounded, astonished Job proclaims the presence of Yahweh, and out of this whirlwind God answers for and proclaims himself. Reader, canst thou not conceive something of what these men felt? Art thou not astonished, perplexed, confounded in reading over these descriptions of the thunder of God's power? Prepare, then, to hear the voice of God himself out of this whirlwind. Ladies and gentlemen, that prepares us to go to our next chapter, Job 38, and we will see the Lord answering Job. I hope you stay tuned for that more edifying chapter, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.